morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me. I've forgotten his name, but
Well, forget what I said about good radio voice, man. Yeah. Mike Cosentino is over here. We have a local activist in the studio this morning. That's exciting. We do lots of stuff, a lot of political stuff on the show. We solve all the, certainly the nation's problems, if not the world. But this morning, we're talking to...
We're going to talk to Steve Signer about local issues in Sedona. And Steve is the owner of El Portal, a beautiful bed and breakfast. I've been there a couple of times. Love the lights over the center courtyard. It's quite beautiful. But he's also an innovative businessman. But what he did recently, let's talk about that first. All the stuff he's done is he did something I think is extraordinarily brave. He was scammed by some guys pretending to be APS.
Yes, APS. Electrical company. Do you want me to explain what happened?
Yeah, what happened, Steve? Because when people get scammed, I know if I get scammed, I'd be too damned embarrassed to ever go public with what happened, because it makes me look like I don't know what I'm doing, which a lot of times may be
true. But
yeah. Steve, what happened?
Well, it was a Saturday, and we're busy at the hotel, and lots of people eating breakfast, and we get a phone call. My wife gets a phone call from APS saying that for some reason last month, automatic deposit didn't come through, and then we were behind, and we had to make a deposit, or they'd shut off the power at 1 o'clock on a Saturday. Well, for a hotel to have no power on a Saturday is just the most terrifying thing in the world.
Sure.
And you're busy. And when we talked to them, I actually got a phone number and I called them back. And I called them back at APS, and I got APS, and I got the bad music, and I got the phone tree. And the phone tree even had service turn on, turn off. You know, it had the whole phone tree.
Oh.
So I finally get to a gentleman. He was very nice. And he says, well, probably what happened is the money went to somebody else's account. We can straighten it out next week. That being said, we have to make a deposit. So otherwise, we'll come out and turn it off. And so I thought, well, after getting upset and calling him a few names and saying this is ridiculous, I said, okay, how do we do it? They said, you just go up and you go to a local store in Fry's and you buy a prepaid card and you just phone in the number and it's done. And you can straighten it out next week. So, okay, I'll get it done, straighten it out next week. You know, it's a bureaucratic organization. Stuff like this happens. I even called back one more time and through the phone tree got the person again because my radar was up the whole time. It was just didn't seem right, but then you're dealing with
As the owner of a hotel, the last thing in the world you want is your electricity cut off when you've got a whole bunch of people.
Oh, it's one of the fears. Last night we lost power last night in Sedona, and you know that was a big fear. We lost it for 2 hours. Yeah,
this is a for-profit public utility.
So we did it, and we got scammed, and we got scammed the following Monday for another $1,000. And
what did they say the following month?
Well, that it wasn't enough because our average bill was more than $1,000. They didn't ask the right amount. And then it was interesting, they called right before we had a chance to call the electrical company. And when I called the electrical company, I was put on hold for 45 minutes.
Wow.
I couldn't get through to the regular number to verify what was going on. And that's part of the problem.
They
had figured out exactly how to do it. They knew the phone tree. They knew the wait times. They knew all the acronyms. Then I drove up.
It sort of completely cloned the APS
site.
Absolutely. So even the, like you say, the bad music and the phone tree, everything. And they must have known you were making automatic payments somehow.
Not really. I guess most hotels do, because if you ever miss a payment, they make you post a big deposit. So we just all do it. But I even drove up to their location in Cottonwood. It was closed. Said they don't deal with the public anymore up there. It's all by the phone. And it said, and here's how you pay. You go to the local market to pay. The process they mentioned for me to do was on their door. So, okay, I even drove there to see it because I wanted to talk to somebody in person, but there was nobody in person I could talk to.
Wow.
So they did a very good job.
They
and my radar was up the whole time. My wife's radar was up the whole time. We got taken. And that's where it was at. What really upset me was is that the next day I was talking to somebody and they said, oh, that happened to three or four hotels uptown last week.
And nobody said
anything. And that's what got me upset. And I run the hotel association. And when we find these things out, we immediately notify everybody. So I called up the chamber, called Jennifer, and I said, you know, we got to put a press release out to all your people now. I did the exact same thing to all the hotels, and we sent out about 300 emails, alerts to everybody. And to do that, really, I had to say, here's what happened. And I've been an entrepreneur all my life. You know what? And I'm made by my mistakes. You know, you don't hide from them. You look them in as learning curves, and that's just the way it is. So it didn't bother me. It's just if I could take one other hotel from getting scammed. When I called the police and turned it in, they said, well, they've already had 8 other hotels that had called them.
Oh, my gosh.
So that tells me a lot of hotels didn't call them, too. And that wasn't just hotels. It was small merchants in town.
Wow. And so I think what folks out there underestimated how completely realistic these scams look.
Oh.
I mean, it's not like they call you and they ask for money right away. It's this more elaborate thing where you check on them, but the checking seems to confirm that they are who they say they are.
Yeah, it's a team. I talked to probably 4 different people because I would ask to go to another department and I'd ask to go to a department head and I would get a person. So it was very, very sophisticated.
Is there any results in terms of catching these guys?
No. They could be any place in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's internet. They used internet phones. That's one of the things maybe pick up on a little bit because the phone line was a little bit iffy.
Okay.
So that's kind of got me thinking about it. But no, we can't catch them. The only way we're going to stop it is to get the word out. And get, you know, now when they find hotels in Sedona are up on it, they'll just go to some other city.
Yeah.
And it'll move city by city by city. Now, that's what associations are good for because associations can spread the word.
Right. That's important. And, we hear so much secondhand, I guess, about scamming seniors. They have all these elaborate scams for seniors, but actually scamming fairly sophisticated businesses. It's a very clever thing that they did, calling you on a Saturday, calling you when you couldn't get back to APS itself, giving you all the phone numbers. It's impressive in its duplicity.
They're very good. They did a very good job. They understood how the process works, and they just put themselves into it. I'm sure they could do it with any organization.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Steve Segner, scam victim, but Steve Segner, activist, is really fascinating. This is a busy guy. I thought I was busy.
Steve is one of the innovators in private public activities in Sedona. In other words, Steve owns in the private sector, but he does a lot of public stuff, very innovative work. For example, you want to talk about what you did with the walk between Talakapaki and Uptown?
Walk. What a good
the history
idea.
Walk.
Yeah, well, the history walk came out of an idea that I was on the HPC Commission, Historic Commission, and I still am with the city for the last 10
Historic
years.
Historic Preservation Committee.
Yes. And we were talking a little bit about what we could do. People always ask the hotels and everybody around town, you know, tell us about Sedona. You know, how did it come? Where's downtown? All these questions. And there was no place to really go. So I said, well, why don't we put some plaques up? And everybody liked the idea, but we realized we couldn't do it through the commission process because in the commission process, you have to have open public meetings. Everything has to be recorded. To do 30 plaques would have taken 10 years and God knows how many meetings. So I said, well, tell you what, why don't we just drop the idea and I'll just do it. So I went to the city council. I asked if they would appoint me. I wouldn't say a one-man commission, but just let me do it. If I find the money, I'll run everything past them. I'll let them proof all the plaques, and I'll just do the job. And they kind of looked at me funny and said, well, okay, go. And they let me do it. And so I started researching plaques. I got a team together with some other people to help write the plaques, people to help edit them. I got Sedona 30 to raise some of the money. They put up about a third of it. Wow. And then I asked people to sponsor a plaque for $300, and then I put up the remainder. So we put up, I still have six more I have to put up, but we put up about 36 plaques. But the plaques were just kind of the part of the idea. And the idea I had was, is we've got to get people walking. You know, Sedona's a great hiking town, but we don't talk about walking it because it's got some hills and it didn't have a lot of sidewalks until 179 was put in. Now, that's 179 true. Is a very, very nice walking area now. And it's very safe. So the idea was, is how do I turn Sedona into a walking town? Well, I can work through the hotels to bring up that idea, and I can work through the chamber, but then I've got to have people see people walking.
Right.
So the idea now is they can start up at Pink Jeep Plaza, and they can walk about every 20 feet. They'll see a plaque, and the plaques are on the history, the flora, fauna, the art in the past, and the founder. So it's, and they're in no particular order. So if you don't turn off, if you're really not a history person, you know, the next plaque might be on art.
Right.
Then the next plaque will be on javelinas.
Was that intentional?
That was intentional.
Okay.
And I got the book and I went and talked to the Forest Service about how it's done, and they laid it all out for me. And then I decided that I didn't want to follow anything that they do because it's very formulated.
Yeah, very formulated.
And I didn't, my background's marketing. And, you know, the idea is people have short attention spans and you have to keep them interested.
Yeah.
So that was the idea, and it's worked very well. I was, yesterday when I was driving home, you know, I saw 20, 30 people walking along the path.
I go to Uptown a couple of days a week now, and I always see people stopping reading those signs.
Yeah.
In fact, is that's where you came to my attention as I asked my wife, how did these signs come about? Are people are stopping and walking? How come there's so many more people walking now than there used to be?
Well, that's
and
that's
she
great.
Said this that you, it was sort of your innovation, your idea, and you sort of carried the ball on the whole project.
Yeah,
the connections between, and that's I think if there's going to be a theme for today's show, it's going to be the connections and the wheels within wheels. That the idea of getting people out of their rooms and walking in a small town that's walkable and there's things to see, just that it's not, you know, there's hills and people just weren't doing it. And so this one thing is a great start in getting people. But I'm
and it's an example of the private sector being able to work with the public sector. We always think of them as conflicting, but the private people in the private sector can do very
well. Yeah, all they had to do was say yes.
City.
I mean, but that was really hard for them to do. I mean, yeah, but they did it. You know, they did it. We're praising the public sector.
I mean, it was cooperation. Said, you couldn't have done it without the city council.
Sure, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the important thing, I think business people tend to look at the public sector as being inefficient and we're going to get involved and we're going to show them how it's done. And I think I came in with that attitude. Then after I realized a little bit that they're really competent people and it's very structured, and it's structured for a reason. So you have to kind of get in with their system. And once you realize that the system's slow, it may be inefficient, but it's there for a reason. I have no problem
with
it.
Yes, it is. It's a public process. It's a necessary process.
Yeah.
There are elected representatives. Yeah, I mean, I was a reporter for a long time, so I appreciate, sure, there's lots of things wrong with government, but in 2016, the complaints about government are off the chart, man. What you found is way more the common. You found knowledgeable people willing to work on a project and get it done. That's what I found in government.
Well, you know, I think
I always find in government.
I think a government is a process organization. Their idea is to implement ideas.
Because it's a public organization.
It's a public organization. And they aren't really good at starting processes because it just means work for them. They have to find the budget. So I find that if I bring them a good idea and I get their support, they'll support me and let me do it. So I've had a great relationship with the city. The thing we did after that is I got with the Association for the Artists in town, and I put together an art walk map. So we did an art walk map that takes 45 galleries, and now you can leave any hotel, and there'll be a map at the hotel saying where all the galleries are, and you can walk to all the galleries. The chamber took that over. and is running it. And now we're working on a dining map so you can get out of your hotel room and walk to dining. So the big audacious goal is in 5 years, I want anybody coming to a Sedona hotel to never have to get back in their car. That's my personal goal.
That's great, because you know the number one complaint, as we said before the show, from locals and visitors alike, is traffic, traffic, traffic. Yeah. Tell us the story of the bed tax.
Well, the bed tax, I was on the first and second mayor's committee for the budget committee, and we looked at the budget, and it was a good primer for me to understand how government works. And one of the line items that popped up every year was around $400,000. I think it was about that much money for advertising, promotion, and helping run the Uptown Visitor Center.
Of Sedona at large.
The Chamber of Commerce. The city is giving the Chamber of Commerce some money to support their activities, which the Chamber advertises for all of Sedona, not for a particular hotel.
It was a small amount. I was, you know, coming from a background in marketing, it was a very small amount for a city of this size. And we looked at the number, and in those days, this is 8 years ago, I'm going to say, is that $400,000 in the budget competed against every other thing in the budget. So, in other words, do we spend money with the chamber, or do we put in curbs? So there was always this trade-off. So I was talking to Martinez, John Martinez, who's now a council person, and he said, well, why don't you raise the tax and just take this off the books and you guys pay for it? Kind of a snotty reaction. And I kind of puffed up, and, you know, my job was to defend the hotels.
Sure.
And I said, no. And I started to defend the hotels. Well, I went home that night and I got thinking about it, and I said, you know, it's not a bad idea, because we wouldn't have to come back to the city every year. It wouldn't be competing against things the city really does need to do. And we could probably afford it. We were just coming out into the recession. People were complaining about business. What is the city going to do? What are we going to do? And the other thing that was happening at the same time, the state had passed a law that they were going to drop sales tax by 1%.
Right.
And I said, geez, this is crazy. How can they drop sales tax 1%, start of a, you know, a recession? So I went to the city council and I says, please, please, please pick up the difference. I'll pick up a half cent with the bed tax. You pick up a half cent with sales tax. You won't have to do any more bond issues, and it'll give you some working capital. And the people on our group all agreed. We all thought this was a good idea. Well, the city council at the time said no. They didn't want to tax the people. So they let the sales tax drop 1%. But they did vote for the half cent increase in the bed tax. And then the chamber and the city worked out an agreement where a certain percentage of it went to the chamber. And the chamber act really as an ad agency. And they use the money to promote Sedona. And they've done a very, very good job. And it's worked. I think we were $1.7 million over budget last year in the city in income.
Yeah.
So the money's coming in.
It's still controversial, right?
Well,
Steve?
It is.
There are people who rant and rave against you. It's controversial to
about 10 people, you know. And let's be honest.
Noisy people.
One thing about Sedona, it's a town where the small minority can have a large voice.
Sure.
Where I came from Pasadena, you could be a small minority and have no voice.
Yeah.
So it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing not – We should listen to them. But a prime example is Jennifer made a presentation last week.
Jennifer?
From the Chamber of Commerce, that they want to take some of that bed tax money and buy a couple acres uptown and put in 180 parking places. Now, that money would buy the parking place, maintain it, fix it up, and when it's paid off in 5 years, the property would be given to the city. That's the proposal. It's just an idea they're turning into the city. The city liked the idea at the last meeting. Now the city and the manager will look at it. But the point is, we realize that money has to be used to bring people to Sedona, but it also has to bring money to help support the people in Sedona. In other words, we have an obligation to those visitors coming here to give them a good time, make sure they have parking, but we also have an obligation to the people that live here.
Right.
We've done a number of shows about how the Cottonwood city government has cooperated with the businesses in Old Town, for example. But we've never done one on Sedona, how this works. And a lot of it's because you're willing to innovate. And another innovation, tell us about the 7 Easy Hikes pamphlet, how that works.
Well, I was at another meeting, and I have a real – aversion to group meetings and committees that form. I find that they're great at putting on meetings and taking notes and getting nothing done. So usually when I get involved in something, I say, give me the idea, come back in 6 weeks, and I'll have a solution for you. So I met with the Red Rock Trail Fund, and they were three or four meetings, and I said, tell you what, just give me 6 weeks. And so 6 weeks they came back, and I roughed out this hiking book. And I said, let's print this hiking book. I'll put it in the hotels. We'll get it around town. Anything over net printing cost and writing cost will go to the fund. So got into that, and then I ran back into the committee world because the chamber wanted to look at it, then the Forest Service wanted to look at it, then everybody in the world wanted to look at it. So it took about a year, and it probably cost $10,000, $15,000 to do. Mm-hmm. I hired a professional drawer, I guess you would call it. I hired a
cartographer.
I hired a PR company to write and write it. So it was done well. Yeah. And it's out now. It sells for $8. And all the money goes to the trail fund. And
it's displayed in beautiful little ceramic.
Yeah, I made 100 ceramic holders for them. And, you know, it's kind of fun. You know, in one way, people say, why do you do this? Well, in my past life, I went to work every Monday, and my job was to invent a new product. So every Monday I went to work, and I invented a product, and I followed it through. And so now that I'm out of that business, I still enjoy projects. I still enjoy products. So to me, this was a lot of fun. I think it's a good product, and it's for a good cause.
Where does a person get to do this kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's because you're able to work with the city and all these committees, which requires patience. And I like the idea that you get the idea and run with it, that you innovate. Because, I mean, our program here is an innovation. You know, we came out and I formed a separate group of people to fund this program. And we couldn't do it within the committees. We had to go outside and come inside with a completed product before we got any support. What's your next project? I heard you want to do something with that bridge. It's almost invisible, the walking bridge across Oak Creek.
Yeah, the 179 overpass that goes over the bridge, if you walk it, it's probably one of the most beautiful spots in Sedona. When you look over the bridge, and there's a pedestrian bridge, and then the roundabout. Well, the pedestrian bridge isn't being used, and it was primarily put in, from what I understand, because they had to run all the pipes and the conduits underneath it.
Because we're talking about right there at Tlaki Pocket.
Snubley
Road. Yes. Snubley Road and Tlaki Pocket.
Yeah, so what I want to do is get people walking down from uptown to in front of Tlaki Pocket North, and then take the footbridge over the river. It's a beautiful bridge. It's all iron, but there's no walking, no place to sit. There's no plaques telling you what's going on around there. There's no benches. There's no planting. So
there's not even a plaque that says it's Oak Creek,
no,
right?
No, there's one on the other side that you can't see that the state put up. So I drew up a plan. I had my art person in California draw up, and we photoshopped the whole idea with plants, with trees, with benches, walking all the way down the hillside. I showed it around. Everybody says, hey, I helped chip in on that. Let's do it.
That's great.
I went to the city. The city liked the idea, too. They said, but that's not us. It's ADOT. So the city is working with me trying to get the permits. I think we will eventually. And then what I see is planters and trees. And what I'd really like to do, if you look at the bridge, I'd like to string some wires over the top, and I'd like to grow some grapevines up over it, and I'd make it a nice little tunnel.
Who's paying for this?
I would pay for it.
Well, there we go again.
Yeah.
So you got to.
Steve is a guy who puts his money where his mouth is.
Yeah.
I think, as everybody in Sedona has found out.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about committees is, I find committees will take a good idea and lower it to its lowest common denominator. And, you know, in a marketing background, you know, you have to have the best product. And committees tend to take a good product and lower it.
Sure.
So I listen to committees, I listen to the input, but then I still going to do what I... And the only way you can do that is to use your own money.
How much did you raise bed tax last year?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. I really don't. It was a substantial amount of money, but I don't know.
I think what's interesting, though, too, Mike, is that the... people who are providing beds asked to be taxed more money to invest in getting more people to come to Sedona.
Right. Business was up.
Oh, business was up. It's huge. You know, the bed tax portion that the chamber has is around $2 million. But then you got to understand the other half goes to the city.
Right.
And then there's the other half is the bed taxes. We've got the sales tax, too, so that goes to the city. So this is a city now that probably almost 70% of our operating income comes from bed tax and sales tax. So the people in Sedona don't have to pay any taxes because our visitors are doing it for us.
Yeah. Sedona has no
property tax.
Property tax, right?
Yeah, and people think that, well, you know, I'm being taxed enough. Well, that's the county, and that's the fire district. But, you know, we have a really, really good government and a really nice town that's paid for by other people. You know, at any given time, there's 45,000 people running through this town. Only 8,000 of them live here. 8,000 of them work here.
Yeah.
So we have this view that it's my town, I moved here, and... But if 8,000 people live here and 8,000 people work here and the remainder are driving through, we have an obligation to those other people, too.
I'm going to give a different perspective here. I'm going to give the Democratic, the liberal Democratic perspective. People aren't paying for the services and the town that they have. They don't own the street, the main street that goes right through the middle of their town. How can they give a crap about the town that they live in? How can they care about the schools that they don't support? How can they care about the institutions? How can they care about anything because they got no skin in the game?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, people can live in a community and pay an association fee of $300-$400 a month in a housing association.
That's just to keep the brown people out.
Well, it does. It segregates it. They put up the gates. They're willing to pay. I think a city tax is a great idea. You know, I would support a city tax in a heartbeat. I think people should have skin in the game. And instead of complaining about the streets, we have 100 miles of streets that really should be changed off and fixed and paved on a regular basis. We don't always have the money for that.
Right.
So the things that people want, you know, that's fine. But you got to pay for them. So, right now, we're lucky. If we were an 8,000 a town of 8,000 people in Kansas, we might have two gas stations and a Walmart 40 miles away.
Right.
Okay, and that's all we'd have. So we have to look around and see the restaurants and see a movie theater, and it's clean. You know, when I drive through the West, usually you come up in a little Mormon town or someplace in the middle of Utah or Nevada, and it's kind of junky. Then you get to downtown, and it's kind of worn, and then there's kind of a nice neighborhood. Sedona's beautiful any way you come into it.
It is.
It's just a beautiful little town, and we're very lucky. But, we're lucky that it's paid for by other people. Now, if we need transportation, if we need bus service, and if we need other services, we're going to have to start paying for it.
I think, Mike, a lot of people, Steve, a lot of people don't understand that it's being paid for mostly by tourist spending here.
Right.
And they complain about the traffic and stuff. I mean, how many restaurants would Sedona have if we didn't have any visitors? How many would it support? How many hotels? How many of the little shops? It wouldn't support it all. And I think people have lost a sense of community, Steve, and I know that you tried to do something with philosophy in the public interest to try to connect up people, help build a sense of community here and responsibility in Sedona.
Yeah, well, that's something I worked on. I helped promote it with Judy Reddington. We do it down here.
Philosophy in the public interest.
Philosophy in the public interest. And really what it does is it takes community leaders and they put on seminars and sessions where how do you take divergent views from opposite sides of the spectrums. In other words, how do you get a liberal and a conservative talking and not yelling at each other? So they're really talking about, and what I've learned is you have to look at your own views. You have to be able to change your own views. And we did something at our house this summer. We heard that there was going to be a symposium of philosophers up in NAU.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought down 14 philosophers. We invited about 80 people to our property. We catered a dinner, and then we broke up into groups of about 10 people. And so you had 10 people with a philosopher. And the philosopher's job was to carry on a conversation about philosophy and the environment. And then we would move around from group to group, and people would just discuss and talk. And so this whole dialogue is what I wanted to start. How do we get people talking? So that's something I'm it's important to me.
For our purposes here, let's define philosophy as a step back. You know, philosophers do what we like to think our leaders do. They take a step back and they look at the impact and the larger picture of things, and that's a natural. That's a, in philosophy. That's what they do. So I'm just winging it here that by including these philosophers with the in your small group discussions, you had that. System built in. What a good idea.
And the discussions I participated in one of the groups were heated. And for example, we had one fellow very well spoken, very intelligent, who believed that the path to preservation was not to let any people on the piece of land. Mm-hmm. In other words, and so there was, and then everybody else said no. We had lawyers there, we had philosophers, and we had this really intense discussion about public lands and public policy. I thought it was very valuable and very interesting. And it's the kind of thing that I mean, we have a partisan political show here, but we're interested in nonpartisan discussion too.
Well, sure.
And I thought it was a great idea what you and the other group had done. What else could you do in this direction?
I want to ask. I'm going to put you on the spot here. We got 14 minutes. I'm going to throw you a curve, and you can say no. As long as I've lived in the Sedona area, which has been 50 years.
He's only 30 years old. But
yeah, I have a 30-year-old voice, but a 70-year-old face for radio, for sure. Walkways over the highway. The other thing that the traffic complainers complain about are, great, Steve, you got everybody walking. That just means I have to slow down because I can't run them over. Other towns put walkways over their highways.
Well, Arizona has them. If you'll see them when you go to Phoenix.
They have them, but Sedona doesn't.
Well, and they aren't being used in Phoenix. They found out that after they built them, they cost millions of dollars. They put them up. They aren't used. They can't be used by people in wheelchairs as a whole, so they have to start with this great, big, slow expanse to get up to them.
To make it ADA.
To Macapaki, if you did it, frankly, it would have to start probably at Los Avogados to get over the top. Okay. The other thing I've discovered a little bit, in this town, and most
but
things,
you have looked into it, because Mike's question is something people ask, well, why don't we put a bridge over the road so that would get traffic going?
I think it's a logical question, and I think what happens is people in this town say, well, if they just did this, it would work.
That's right.
And those are the easy things, and I think philosophy helps you understand that there's many, many ways of looking at a problem. So we should look at those, and we do. And what you find out is that sometimes they just aren't practical. What I found out and did a little research is that part of the problem in traffic on about 13 Saturdays is when people a year are coming up from Phoenix is that people will not let other people come into the roundabouts. They're so frustrated by being in line that when they get to the roundabout, they won't let anybody kind of sneak in. Well, what happens at Tlacopaki North now is people cross over.
Right.
They put a break in the traffic.
Right.
And that break in the traffic, when it gets up to the Y, all of a sudden lets people come in.
Oh.
So there's some non-intuitive things we always have to kind of keep our eye open for. And I'm always looking for those things. In Sedona, since we're a tourist town, it's only going to get worse. And I say that because we're going to have 10 million more people in this state in the next 20 years. And they're going to come up on weekends to Sedona. And so what we have to do is get to the mindset of how do we mitigate some of this, but how do we also get the residents to realize you don't go to bashes, okay, at 4 in the afternoon on a Saturday. So we have – it's a give and take. I came from Pasadena, and when they had the horse races in Arcadia, you did not get anywhere near Huntington Drive or some other drives because you knew that for 3 hours it was going to be – you understood. So part of the traffic will be a learning curve that we're all going to have to learn that we'll take different times that we travel. I have a property up the canyon, and I cannot go home on a Saturday and expect to come back to work
right.
at 3 in the afternoon. If I go up, I have to stay home there.
Until dark anyway.
Yeah, until they built the roundabout at Morgan, my brother couldn't get out of his neighborhood and turn left to go uptown.
Yeah.
A lot of the time he had to turn right, go all the way down, find some place, turn around and come back up left. I think what you're making is one of the hardest things, though, Steve, for Americans to understand is that we really resent having to change our behavior even a little bit. And what you're saying is absolute common sense. Why go to uptown on the busiest day of the year and try to drive up the canyon in the middle of the day?
Here's another.
But it's not, Americans, I think, always look for a technological solution. Mm-hmm. They don't look at changing their own behavior sort of collectively to ease things. So how do you talk to them about that?
Well, I think programs like this, go to meetings, talk to people and explain to them, you know, there's not a magic silver bullet that's going to make this stop. And if 45,000 people a day are here, and we took 5,000 of them out, would it make a difference? It probably wouldn't, because they're all going to still come at the same time.
Yeah.
It's really only 13 or 14 weekends a year. 98% of the time, there's no traffic. When I was on the traffic study that we're putting on right now, and I met with the engineers, I said, you know, we need to quantify traffic. You know, what's bad? And he looked at me and he said, yeah, you're right. So, what is bad traffic? And we do have some bad traffic days. And
what's good traffic?
Yeah, what's good traffic? And I think one of the things we can do on 179 coming into town is actually put up some temporary signs on, say, a Friday saying tomorrow will be a heavy traffic day. You know, plan accordingly. Now, all of a sudden, you're living in that neighborhood, and you forgot that it's a busy weekend.
That
it's Washington's birthday or something.
Yes, good idea.
And all of a sudden, you say, oh, that's right. Let's go to the market today. So, one, we have to train the people to know what's coming down the line.
Good idea.
So, the other thing is if we could put some signing at the very, very top of 89A saying 45-minute delay through Sedona and get some of that traffic going back down 17. Now, this is being talked about, and I think this will get worked on. I think we need to stop most of the illegal parking in the canyon. You see, as you go up the canyon, they're parked in the sides, they're barbecuing, they're climbing down the cliffs. We need to get that probably
compared
fixed.
To what it was when I was your age. You have eliminated most of the illegal parking in the camp, but there is more of it.
But I went up one Saturday and stopped counting at 1,000 cars. Now, if you have 1,000 cars and they all decide to leave at 3 o'clock, guess
right.
what happens?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is it's not going to be a silver bullet. It's going to be let's work on this, let's work on this, let's work on this, let's work on this, and it'll mitigate it to a point.
So my pedestrian overpasses, which I thought was the solution to everything, was the silver bullet. You're saying, I think you're wrong. I think they may not have worked in Phoenix, and they might not work in Phoenix. But I think in Sedona, at Pink G Plaza, at Tlaquepaque, two wonderfully artistically crafted pedestrian overpasses would be well used and help.
You'd have to get permission to have them not to be wheelchair.
Well, you got to understand. You know, let's visualize it for a second. You have to get a full truck underneath it.
Yes, sir.
So it has to be extremely high. Now, what you notice now at the end of town, they're putting in the elevator. That new structure by the church, that's going to be an elevator. It'll take you up to a ramp. That ramp will be level and take you over to the city parking lot. And then the chamber wants to buy another 2 acres and put another city parking lot in. Mm. That city parking lot, when I took a kind of a busman holiday and I went to the south and I went to a lot of cities to see how they handle pedestrian traffic. And what I found out was they always had a central area where the buses and the jeeps dropped everybody off and picked everybody up.
Wow.
So it would be that kind of area we're looking at now. So if we had an area where the tour buses would drop off, where the pink Jeep would pick up a drop off,
sure.
where everybody knew that was the area, and you could go in there and you could get information about Sedona, you could get information on Jeep trips, but it's all in one central area. Then from there you could walk uptown. Or better yet, you could pick up a tram, and that tram would pick you up and take you all the way down to Hillside and maybe start working out towards West Sedona. That's the goal I think we'd all like to see. I think getting people where they're walking in a tram, not using their car.
Right.
What I notice uptown, and I go through it probably more than anybody, 6-7 times a day, is that you can have a crosswalk, you can have the light, and they'll walk 10 feet over and just walk in front of you. And,
yes.
And the new traffic studies.
Yes, they will.
And if you look uptown, you'll see a little sign that's a sign that has a hand that says, please don't walk, wait till the light.
Mm-hmm.
I put that up 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I got fed up of being there at the stop and people will just walk in front of me.
Yeah.
So it's hard to change people's habits.
Yeah.
And to go 30 feet to that bridge and then go over the bridge and go down when I can just go across. Now, the traffic study is looking at some ways of stopping that people walking and jaywalking. I think they're looking at ways of mitigating people backing out. So I think what we need to do is give the traffic study some time. Let them come out and make their full report. And then we can ask those questions like you just asked.
Okay.
And I think that's a good question. I think a question, it has to be asked, but it has to be asked of an engineer, not of me.
Before it's over, hospitality jobs. Talk about jobs. You said something.
Well, my project I'm working on right now is that we're down probably close to 800 jobs in this town.
Let me say that slowly. 800 jobs here in Sedona.
In Sedona.
Vacancies.
Vacancies.
Got it.
We just need people, and we need good people. But it's an expensive town.
$8 an hour jobs.
No. The starting wage in this town starts at 12 now. Most hospitality people are at the 15, 16, and up. And hospitality is a good starting business. You know,
sure.
A young person can get in hospitality and in their 30s be making $60,000, $70,000 a year. It's a job that really you don't have to have a college degree and a pedigree. You just have to have good work skills and people skills.
Yeah, show up on time.
It's a great, and I encourage kids. So we're working with Yavapai College to put together a school for hospitality. But no, we need jobs. And the problem is we don't have housing. And low-income housing is something I don't think we're going to get in Sedona. I think the land's just too expensive. But Cottonwood's not that far away.
Not that far.
In California, it was
14
nothing.
Minutes.
It was nothing to drive, an hour and a half to work. So 14, 15 minutes, I think what we lack.
House to the station. I've got to make this clear.
Yeah, my goal is not what's happening right now when a hotel opens up. To hire people, they just take people from other hotels. So
right.
we have this domino.
Well, yeah. Have a drink with hotel people. That's all they talk. Yeah. Not all they talk about.
My goal that I'm going to work on next year is I want to work in the Prescott Valley. Now, the best way to hire somebody is hire somebody who's working already. So I'd like to put up some billboards or advertising in the Prescott Valley saying there's great jobs in Sedona.
That's a good idea. We've got
2 minutes left. Steve, any general thoughts about, you've been so successful in doing private innovation for public purposes. Is there any way to encourage other people to do this in other towns, or what's the ground of this particular activity? How do you get it going?
Well, I'm probably a little unusual because I'll just do the work and put up the money if I think it's a good thing. So I don't know if you're going to get a lot of people do that. But I think this is a town of people, of doers. And, the people who live here have great backgrounds, great skill sets. Bring them, use them. But I think the first thing to do is work with the city. Don't work against the city. The city is not the enemy, and they're not this giant bureaucracy that's going to fight you. Talk to them. Take your idea. They'll work with you.
Yeah, these aren't people that just got up one day and decided they want to screw things up and they ran for council. Most of these people are well-meaning citizens.
We've been talking to Steve Signer here, who's the owner of El Portal, beautiful bed and breakfast, and an innovator in using
just
the
about
private
everything.
Sector stuff to help out the public. He's done many jobs.
We want to invite you to listen to Alessandra, the executive director of the ACLU, will be in Sedona December 15th, that's Thursday at 8:30 a.m. The doors open at 8 a.m. Thursday, December 15th. Her topic is going to be Arizona legislation and litigation.
And she'll be on our show after the meeting?
She'll be on our show right after. Please go listen to her at Old Sedona Bar and Grill. We are, our website is vvid.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.